You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 315. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight, out of Philadelphia, PA, Mr. John Gentile.
I'm here. I'm ready to rock, baby.
Also, out of Los Angeles, the City of Angels, the frequently destroyed by Hollywood aliens. I don't really know anything about Los Angeles. You have palm trees?
Yeah, we got palm trees.
Bad Religion is from there.
Bad Religion, yeah.
Yeah, see, yeah. There you go. Sebastian Anyways, Bach. Hi, Ricky. What? Yeah.
Sebastian Bach, Skid Row.
Sebastian Bach, yeah, sure. Ricky Frankel is here. Hi,
hey.
Ricky.
Actually, Bad Religion actually went to the same, went to El Camino High School, which is only not too far away from here. I actually went to summer school there. So, a little bit of a connection. But yeah. So, guys. Anything happen when I wasn't on the podcast?
John. Adam. Ricky's on the podcast.
What? I thought he wasn't supposed to be on this week.
Where the fuck is Tom?
Damn, I thought it was Tom this week. We got Ricky again.
So as we covered, your generation is a trash generation.
Yes.
And you've ruined the world with all of the various grievances that we voiced last week when you weren't on the show.
Agreed.
So yeah. All right, as long as you agree, we can.
I'm not gonna defend my peers. No, they ruined it. Yeah.
Really, I'm most angry because I wasn't a millennial, and I feel like I was reclassified as a millennial. Like
I keep hearing the definition change. Sometimes like just kids born in the 90s, and then it's. And then, like, it goes, like, to, like, late 70s or something?
Yeah, like, I was born in 1982, and I was quite confidently understood that I was either Generation Y or my generation was so shitty and undefined that it didn't have a name. Like, that, like, Gen X was super cool, but we weren't Gen X, and it was just, like, whatever the fuck we were, it didn't matter. And I was okay being that, because...
Generation Y was cool. We had No Doubt and Sublime. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then like Ska died, and then they were just like, this isn't a fucking generation. So then they made us all millennials. They just like hitched us on. So I don't know. I've never vaped, guys. I don't know anything about this. I don't know how to do it.
I've seen people vape.
Me too. It just makes you know, me just it's just kind of like a little warning sign, like not to talk to this person.
When I was in university, we had a second year I think it was a second year computer programming class. And it was a weed out class. Like it was purposefully pretty hard and it was pretty unforgiving in how the marking worked in it. And the reason for this was that it was supposed to force you to, well, like to really buckle down and to figure shit out and not just kind of coast through it. Like I remember at one point, this would have been like in say like 2002 or something like that. We had to write these computer programs and then upload the code that we had written to this auto marker that our professor had put together. And you'd upload your code into the auto marker. It would compile it, run it. And then if anything was wrong, it would display you this animated GIF of someone hitting their head on a desk. and this hurt because this was before, you know, this was before like 4chan or Reddit. Like there was not internet trolling to this degree that I had experienced. So it was mean. So I remember that guy had uploaded it a couple times. Oh, and every time that you uploaded it and it didn't work, you lost 10%.
Oh, damn.
Ooh. So I'm like, oof, okay, I've done this a couple times. I'm going to start to really get myself in hot water here. So I went and I was talking to the prof. I'm like, I can't figure out how to get this thing right because like I run it and my program's giving me the right answer. But I run it on yours and it says it's wrong. And he's like, well, it's giving me He's like, well, he looked and he goes, it's given the right answer, but it's doing it inefficiently. Like, you're not doing it
what
right.
What a douche. Tell me to go to hell, Adam.
Well, no, but hold on. This is a millennial thing. So I'm like, okay, well, what do I do about this? He's like, look, I'm going to get a little bit computer programming here, but he goes, you're allocating memory to do something and you're clearly not giving up the memory that you're taking. So get a pad of paper and go through your code line by line and fucking write it down and figure it out. So I'm like, all right, person who is clearly smarter than me, I'm going to go do this. So I went and I got a pad of paper and I wrote down the shit and I figured it out. And I'm like, okay, I understand what I'm doing wrong here. Rewrote my thing and put it in. Yeah, I lost 20 or 30% on the assignment by doing this, but whatever. I learned how to go fucking buckle down and do it. I get back to class the next day, and in class, everyone that's sitting in the lecture hall before the professor gets there are organizing a mutiny. They're like, this is hard. We're going to march to the dean's office. And I'm like, what? Like, no, you just got to go, like, you got to go do it. It's hard. And it's like, no. This is an affront. We don't deserve this. We're marching to the dean. I'm like, marching to the dean? I'm like, marching to the dean is not something that I do if something is hard. Like, marching to the dean is like the teacher is physically abusing me. I'm not going to go march to the dean because the fucking class is hard. That is weird. I don't understand that.
That's more effort than doing the assignment.
Well, yeah. But then I learned in talking to people afterwards that, like, that class, the class I was in, was by and large had the reputation of being like the whiniest, most entitled, complaining class they had ever come across. And I have to assume that was just the start of like the millennial wave.
I graduated 2 years ago now, and it's compared to what you saw, it's probably just gotten worse.
We joked about microaggressions, but we like no one had that phrase when we were there, right? It was, but there was a lot of like looking at like the things that were hard, being like this is an outrage. We're gonna complain. You know, like, I'm not gonna go complain with you.
I got a similar story. I remember when I was in college, there was a class that was known for being the hard class, and what we had to do is we had to compile our algorithms against the X and the Z axes, and so, you know, I went to the professor, I was like, professor, I can't get my quadrant defector to really compile all the algorithms. And he said, listen, you gotta go back to your house, go to the beach, get a stick and write it out in the sand. And so, you know, I was trying to compile my algorithms and, you know, going through my integrations and disseminations, you know, just totally computing, you know. And
then did you realize you weren't in that class?
I realized I was in geography. No, but actually, Adam, it's true. I went to Santa Clara Law School, very good law school out in the West Coast. It's the intellectual property law school. And the class above me, the library was packed all the time. So for my class, the library was packed all the time. But in my class, even though law school is like high school, and that there's law school is very much like high school, and that there's cliques, there's cool people, there's nerds, even though it's law school. And so there was like four or five cool kids in my law school that would like smoke cigarettes outside of the library and study a little bit. The class after me, the number of people in the library dropped dramatically studying, and the class below them, the library was almost vacant. And sure enough, the law school's grades started declining, and it's a bummer for me because that means I lose the reputation of the law school. And so it just goes to show that, like, I guess millennials don't know how to work hard. I guess that's the moral of the story. They're lazy and entitled, you know, like, you got to put in the work. And I'm not going to go that angle, but it's true. And that's my story.
Those fuck you, peers. Young people. That's what we're saying.
Hey, I listen, I'm not going to say you guys are wrong. Believe me, I had to look across the room and be like, you're seriously not going to just deal with this? Really? It happened several times. It's in college, at least. We had a lot. There was one class I had, if we're just sharing college stories, and it was the whole class, your grade depended on just the midterm. And if you failed the midterm, you could retake it, but you would have to miss class where he was discussing the final paper. And, you know, I put in 3 days to pass that midterm. And there are people just freaking out and just saying that they just refused to do it, and they ended up not being able to move on to the thesis course. I don't know what happened to them. Said, I don't care.
Well, anyways, if you'd like to write us about why your generation doesn't suck, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that.
And I will refute it.
Yes, and Ricky, yeah, okay. Just to be clear, none of us actually want to debate this or care. So, but I don't know.
Oh, man, I just used a racial slur and I didn't even mean to.
What?
Well, we're going to have to edit that out, boys. Let me tell you. Definitely gonna have to edit that out.
Okay, we'll bleep it, and then everyone can everyone can guess.
Can I say, I didn't even know that it was a racial slur, but something maybe that's a racial slur. It's not that better.
Okay, if you can guess the racial slur that John inadvertently said that we beeped out.
This is really gone downhill fast.
It's a pretty obscure one, so you probably won't guess it. Oh man.
Well, you fucked up. Let's talk about how I'm recognizably great.
Oh man, what are we, 10 minutes in? That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So John, I don't know if you saw.
Oh, I saw Adam. I saw.
But the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, should I read you what the whole point and purpose of the Canadian Broadcasting Association is?
Before you do, I don't know if we're on this list anymore after John's little mishap right now.
Well, no, that's why we have the magic of beeping. But let me let's see here. What is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's mandate? According to the 1991 Broadcasting Act in Canada, it states that the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, as the national public broadcaster, should provide radio and television services incorporating a wide range of programming that informs, enlightens, and entertains. The programming provided by the corporation, which is how the CBC refers to himself, should... let's see here. One, be predominantly and distinctively Canadian, reflect Canada and its regions. Two, actively contribute to the flow and exchange of cultural expression. Let's see, some English and French stuff. That's not interesting. Here we go. Five, contribute to the shared national consciousness and identity. That sounds pretty fucking important.
Cute.
Let's see. That's really the one that I'm going to wear as a hat. So, John, why don't you tell the people what came about here?
Well, the CBC posted a link, an article of the seven best podcasts in the world, located on the list where some very, very good music podcasts, including Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, Damian Abraham's Turned Out at Punk, and who... should be listed as one of the seven best podcasts in the world by noted cultural devotee Mark Cameron, but the Punk News Podcast listed at number four, specifically episode number 307, Coffee and Butts. And I'll even read his little spiel to let Adam bask in the glory. Here's what Mr. Cameron said about how wonderful we are. While Punk News is technically based in the States, their managing editor, Adam White, is based in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. This podcast is a weekly report of punk-centric news, including stories of the week and album reviews. Co-podcast host John Gentile is a delight. Plus, you're sure to find some great Canadian punk artists here. Adam White often acts as a host and does a great job of sticking up for the little guys north of the border. And it should be noted that John Gentile's added commentary is delightful, refreshing, and insightful.
that is exactly what it says. So if anyone wants to go find this wonderful write-up that we got, the article is actually titled Seven Music Podcasts to Make Your Commute Tolerable. Yes, it is by Matt Cameron. It's a super honor to be mentioned. I mean, for me to be mentioned on the CBC at all, that's kind of geeky. For me, that's
pretty cool, man. That's PBS, but for Canada.
That's PBS, but for Canada. Like that's all I care about. I was going to say just to also be in the, held in the same group as Vish Khanna and Damian, because both of their shows are really good, and I like them both as creative people. So yeah, Cool.
It is worth mentioning that Coffee and Butts features all three of us. Just saying.
It does. This came about in the way that I learned about most things, which is that I was giving my kids a bath and paying not a lot of attention to them and looking at my phone. And then I saw, I think it was either Damien or Vish posted the link and was like, hey, thanks, Mac Cameron, for writing this. And in my brain, I thought, it wouldn't be funny if the Punknees podcast was on that article. And then I went, and it was. So then I wandered into my bedroom and like stuck my phone in my mom's face, or my mom, pulled up my phone, pulled up the article, threw it at my wife's face, and was like, wow, the CBC thinks I'm great. And then I marched away. So I did that in the I want to say, the most graceful, humble Canadian way that I could.
Well, we are the champions.
Now I'm having a sip of beer. So, yeah.
We are the champions. Amazing. Adam White, let me shake your hand. Ricky Frankel, let me shake your hand. We're killing it, boys. We are killing it as the Canadian government. CBC sponsored by the government, isn't it, Adam?
My tax money pays for it. It costs, and this is a point of contention in Canada. Each Canadian citizen pays an upwards of $30 a year to upkeep the CBC.
Well, listen, as long as they keep telling us how great we are, it's 30 hours well spent. And that's 30 hours Canadian, so it's only like $20 US.
That's one of the funny things is that, like, so, like, everyone else's public broadcasters is way more, well, maybe not in the States, because PBS is not really, I don't think the government has a lot in PBS, right? Like, it's mostly just like
PBS is mostly fun drives.
Yeah. So the CBC in Canada, they were the previous government that we had, the conservative government up here, generally is not a fan of the CBC because they perceive that the CBC leans left and favors the left parties and stuff like that in their political reporting. I don't know if that's true, but that's the perception. So they being like free market capitalists, the idea that we have this government funded anything is an affront to their laissez-faire sensibilities. So they defunded the CBC quite a bit when they were up here, basically dropping their standards to the point where they're going to talk about me. No, what I was going to say was that they defunded it quite a bit, to the point where right now the CBC costs each Canadian about like $30 a year. And if you compare that to like how much, say, like each citizen of the UK pays in taxes towards keeping the BBC going, like they're like, it's like $100 and something a person a year, not like 30. So the CBC is pretty affordable for what we get out of it, but it could be so much better if we decided to actually fund it. So yeah, maybe I won't be on there if we put more funding into it. This is why they have Doctor Who and we don't have Canadian Doctor Who.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they have that extra $70 going in there. That's all Doctor Who money.
Does this mean we get to meet Justin?
My mother-in-law has a photo of her and Justin Trudeau standing on the streets of Toronto at some point before he was ever in government. He was like walking around and she was just like, oh my God, it's Justin Trudeau. And like chased him down with a camera and made her take a picture with him. And now he's the prime minister. So anyways,
you think he'll give us medals? Like, you know that final scene in Star Wars where they all like walk up in front of all the soldiers? You think we'll do like us three will like walk up between a bunch of Canadians and then like Justin Trudeau will like smile at us and then give us each like medals and then like a robot will beep?
Yes, that would be really the ideal end to my life, is if that whole thing played out just like that. I mean, the other thing too is like, instead of Chewbacca in that scene, because Chewbacca doesn't actually get a medal if you notice, right? We could use like a Sasquatch. So there's like a Canadian thing that's kind of like a Chewbacca that is there and doesn't get a medal, but he can roar at the end and then the credits start.
What would our R2-D2 be, though?
Jesus.
Can it be an animated Punk News mixtape?
Whatever you want. How's that going, by the way? Where's our fucking mixtape, John?
I will tell you where the mixtape is. I am waiting for it, and I actually have to send out an email because we're late, but hell, we're always late, so that's just how it's going to be, is I love the Punk News listeners, and especially the Punk News purchasers of the tape so much that I had a special tape physically made just for us, and that's why there's a little bit of a delay. We literally had a tape, because I didn't know this, even though there's 120-minute cassette tapes, The real maximum amount you can get is 55 minutes per side, which was exactly what the last mixtape was. It was 54 minutes and 50 seconds a side. But this one is 56 and 57 minutes a side. So I had to have a tape made exclusively just for us. And so that's why there's a little bit of a delay. But we'll have it pretty soon.
And there's actually a company out there that will make you a custom length tape.
There is, yes, indeed.
Or you just have like kids in an alley, like scotch taping, you know?
No. I'll give him a shout out. I checked with a bunch of cassette companies, but I went with Fortress Audio, who we used last year. Fortress Audio is a mom and pop place out in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. And they're not cool. They're not hip. And actually, I think their main business is making cassettes for prisoners. For some reason, prisoners are allowed to have cassettes, but not CDs. And it has to be a special type of cassette. And so they made a tape last year. They did a beautiful job. And this year, I'm like, well, let's do it again. I actually asked some other companies too, which I felt bad about because I like people. I like Fortress Audio, but they weren't the cheapest. But I got a lot of flaky answers from other people, and Fortress Audio was like, well, we can do it, but we'll have to make cassettes just for you. And I said, all right, Fortress Audio, I love you. Let's do it.
Wow.
Fancy.
So this means that if I was to try to kill someone with my Punk News mixtape, it is ill-suited as like a shank.
No, because ours does double as a shank because we don't have prison cassettes. We have normal cassettes, but our cassettes aren't even normal. They're literally custom cassettes. We have custom cassettes being made just for us.
But okay. So they didn't incorporate any of like the prison standards into ours.
Maybe next year, if we do one next year, we'll do one prison cassette tapes.
This is interesting news. All right, what's in the mailbag before we get to some shit that's going on this week?
Well, this is from Sam. And about, I don't know, 4 or 5 podcasts ago, I said, I think it's pretty lame how Henry Rollins was dissing on Flag and dissing on Keith Morris, particularly because he was in a jeans ad and also because Keith Morris has always supported Henry Rollins. So for Henry Rollins to diss on Keith Morris is pretty lame in my opinion. I couldn't find the interview where he really dug into Keith Morris, but I found an interview where I think he took shots at Keith Morris. Some people think in that interview that I referenced, Henry Rollins didn't take shots at Keith Morris. Some people think he did. And so Sam down in Australia wrote us a letter, and this is what Sam had to say. Hi, guys. I just heard a promotional interview on FBI radio here in Sydney, Australia, with Henry Rollins ahead of another spoken word tour. FBI is a Sydney-only radio station and is continually community-funded for not-for-profit, so I think the interview might fly under the radar somewhat, but it was really heavy, I thought. Henry was really upbeat and being Henry, and then the topic of Black Flag reunions and Flag reunion tour came up, and then he stated that he was asked to be a part of the Flag tour. He came out strong and said that he was asked to do it and refused to do it. He said he didn't agree with it, that honestly they were doing it just because they needed the money and it's an income stream for them. I am paraphrasing because I wasn't recording, but this is very close to what he said. He said it was basically shit on everything. He said it basically shit on everything they were about. Those weren't songs they wrote, but quote, battle hymns, and now they are over. He was disappointed that they would do that. I don't remember any comments like this at this sort of 2013 time among all the press talk, and that he couldn't be on the tour only because of scheduling. It was intense to hear. Why say this now? What really happened? What's your opinions? Good work, guys, from Sam. And I think Sam sent a follow-up. Give me 1 second. Oh, he also said it made him want to remove the Black Flag tattoo with a laser, but he couldn't be bothered finding the 40 minutes to do it. Sheesh. Now. I trust that Sam is being truthful. I'd certainly like to hear that interview, and that would really change my opinion of Henry. But I can't affirmatively say that until I hear the actual interview. But this fits with what I think Henry Rollins has been doing the past 3 or 4 years.
If this is true, I mean, what? Has Henry? I don't think Henry's been to a Flag show, but like, do you know how much these guys are happiness these guys are bringing to punk fans that were not alive during the Black Flag era? Like, Punk Rock Bowling, people were flipping out more than ever. It was one of the most passionate audiences I'd ever seen.
I guess Henry being
Henry,
like one of the people, well, Henry being Henry and Henry being one of the people involved with, you know, in the band when it was a band. I mean, he's certainly within his rights to shit all over it. Yeah. I just, you know, I don't think that any of us necessarily need to let Henry Rollins make our life decisions for us. So, A, don't cheese grate off your Black Flag tattoo. It's probably pretty cool. And two, go see Flag and you'll have a good time. And go see Henry Rollins doing speaking and you'll have a good time. And don't worry about the interplay between the two, because they're just being old people. And, you know,
I actually got my ticket for the spoken word tour. So
when is that?
Well, the one I'm going to is in December. But it's like all over the place. I mean, literally all over the world.
I might go just to heckle him.
There's one coming up here.
Boo, Henry. Don't talk bad about Keith Morris. I hate you. Boo.
I would not mind it if he were to join up with Flag and do some songs. I think that would be really cool.
I would. Anybody that detracts from Keith is a step down in my direction, unless it's Dez Kadena doing about five songs, in which case it's the same.
That's very measured. All right. Anything else in the mail, John?
You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And thanks for writing in. We love getting your mail.
All right. So we are going to get to some of the stories that happened this past week. But before we do that, I guess I have to live up to the reputation that the Mother Corp has given me about talking about Canadian bands on our U.S. American podcast. So I'm going to do just that. This is a band that I cannot stop listening to. The band is called Right Shitty. They're from St. John, New Brunswick. There are members of a handful of other New Brunswick bands that are in here. I cannot remember what any of them are called right now. I think one of them might be called like Triceratops or something like that, but it is escaping me. But it doesn't matter, because you don't need to know any of that, because this is great. So the first full length from Right Shitty that is here is called Bachelor of Arts. It was released earlier this year on... Is there a label here? Let's see what the label is. Yeah, that's what I was singing. I don't know. It's on a label. I'll link it in the show notes for this, but it's not jumping out at me right now because it's not on their Bandcamp page. But anyways, it's a super, super fun, super addictive, incredibly distorted 90s influenced punk rock record. There's all that, you know, all that really nice grungy stuff mixes with a bunch of replacementsy influences that are in there, and that is the worst description of anything ever, but whatever, it's great. So I'm gonna play a song called Best Buzz from the album Bachelor of Arts, which is the 12 song full length debut, as far as I can tell, from Right Shitty out of St. John, New Brunswick. This is super fun and I love it. This is Best Buzz. Here you go.
Ah!
All right, we're back. That was Right Shitty out of St. John, New Brunswick. And we are going to talk about really the biggest punk rock story of the year, if not one of the biggest punk rock stories of, I don't know, recent history. It has finally happened. The classic era Misfits, or at least the best modern approximation of the classic era Misfits that you're going to get, has reunited on stage at Riot Fest in Denver, Colorado. The Misfits, billed as the original Misfits, played their first set since, let's say, 1983. I was 1 year old at that point.
You could have went, man. You could have went.
The band included, of course, and this is really the big news in this whole regrouping here, singer Glenn Danzig, bassist Jerry Only, guitarist, Doyle Von
Doyle.
Wolfman,
it's like Doyle Von Frankenstein. Or something.
Yeah, Doyle. And drummer Dave Lombardo was hopping in to drum because, I don't know. There was no one from the Misfits camp previous was jumping in to do that. So the band, they performed there. They're going to perform at Riot Fest Chicago, which is coming up. I don't know when. And there is lots of horrible cell phone footage of this that you can go find on the internet. Really, maybe more interestingly, you can also go find the full track list and the encore and everything that they did. It's so. I guess I'll throw this over to you guys and see, get some reaction here. I guess either to the track list or to some of the footage that you saw. What's the perception here, John? What do you think?
Well, as per the Misfits, the classic era Misfits, the track, the set list is always really weird. Like what they open with here. Let me pull it up right now. We don't have the article ready.
Death Comes Ripping.
Oh, yeah, Death Comes Ripping is a badass song, but that's not what I would have them open with in my mind. I would have them open with like Earth AD or We Are 138 or something. But that, like, the Misfits set lists have almost no organization whatsoever. It's just their songs. And it's partially because like all their songs are 10 out of 10s. So no matter how they play it, it's awesome. I think the actual show was awesome. I didn't hear anybody say anything bad. It sounded like they had a great time. It sounded like the band stayed true to their legacy. And also, you know, it was very much the Misfits doing the Misfits, and, you know, Danzig's in top form. Jerry Only certainly ceded the spotlight, which I guess some people were a little surprised about, but it was what everyone hoped. It was what everyone hoped it would be, kind of just like Flag. And I saw some people like, I can't believe the Misfits reunited. It's like, the Misfits weren't ever crass. They never said that we don't do anything for money or we don't do anything for fame or popularity. The Misfits sang about blowing people in half with shotguns and ripping out people's necks. Like, I don't think you can really fault them for reuniting it or harming their legacy. The only way they could harm their legacy by reuniting is if they were crappy, but they weren't. They were awesome.
The Misfits are like the most merchandised punk band ever. Yeah. It's not like they can sell out by doing anything. So,
I have a lot to say about Jerry Only's following interview, but I'll let Ricky react to, I guess, just the show itself. And Dave Lombardo. This is people. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ricky. Then I've got more to say.
No, I mean, from what I saw in the footage, it looked like it was done just right. There, it wasn't overdone, and it was, you know, the light show, the giant pumpkins on the side. I mean, it was. I was happy with how not overdone it was, and it could have been. The show, show was fine. I don't know about you guys. I noticed a second guitarist in the background.
Yeah, I figured out who that is.
Who was it?
In the interview that we're going to talk about with Jerry Only, he mentions that I'm pretty sure that's AC Slade.
That's who it is.
Who is the current bassist for Joan Jett's band. I guess he was in the Murder Dolls, which was a horror punk band, which is maybe the most Misfits-y link from his past that you can find. But that's who it is. So he plays with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts now. He plays bass for them, actually. So he was definitely the one who was second guitar for them.
It looked like it went well without any problems. I mean, no, like I know I was kind of cautiously optimistic, but I had my doubts because I thought, you know, we'd know how egos would clash on stage or anything like that. But it looked fine, and it was really cool to see, you know, Danzig sing those songs. with those guys.
So I think it was awesome. I think it was exactly what people hoped it to be, and I would expect nothing less from Danzig. People love ragging on Danzig, but man, like at live shows, he comes to wreck the house with live shows. A lot of people are talking about a Rolling Stone interview that happened later on with Jerry Only and Doyle, and I don't know if you guys read it, but first of all, I don't know if Doyle is in character or if Doyle actually is like a sociopath, and like the interviewer is I actually have dealt a little bit with the interviewer. He's a nice guy, but I forget his name. The interviewer, anyways, he's a fan, and he's like, Doyle, it's like, was that exciting? Did you have fun? And he's like, I had equipment problem. And Jerry Only's like, it sounded fine to me. And he's like, I had equipment problem. And then they're like, well, did you have fun? And he's like, I don't care. Like Doyle like. Seemed to like, and then the interview was like, is it different playing with your brother than just playing with Danzig? And he's like, I don't sense any difference. And it's like Doyle is just like a complete like Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, I don't know if that's an act, and I kind of hope that it is. And now that the Misfits are playing again, like, he's stepping back into that very punk role. I mean, that is very punk. To all these people are excited about this, and you just don't give a shit, you know, which I love. Jerry Only is still in Jerry Only mode, and that he's still talking very much in PR, and I don't blame him. And he's like, I'd love to do an album, but of course that's what Jerry Only's going to. I mean, it's certainly in Jerry Only's best interest to do a Misfits album with.
It would be Danzig. Cool. I mean, the shit they've been putting out lately has been awful.
It's certainly in Jerry Only's interest to put out an album with Glenn Danzig than without Glenn Danzig. So of course that's what he's going to say. The question is there's no real money in albums anymore. So I don't think Danzig would want to do another Misfits album, because I feel as though he feels as though he's beyond that. So maybe he doesn't mind playing live, but to do a Misfits album might be a retread. And honestly, I wouldn't want another Misfits album if it wasn't as good as Earth AD or Static Age or That's Walk true. Among Us. Like, if it was just okay, I'd be very disappointed. But if it was awesome, I'd love it. And I don't know if I'm willing to take that risk, if I'm willing to take that risk. So what I was going to say, though, is the other question is, does that make sense for Danzig financially? I mean, because it makes sense for him to tour with Jerry Only, because that brings in bucks. But albums don't really – I mean, they would sell maybe 100,000 copies. That's not that much money on it. That's $100,000 divided by, I don't know, 3, 4 – so figure $33,000 a person after taxes, you get 17 grand. So that's not a ton of money. So Danzig might just rather do another Danzig album, which I would enjoy too. So the point is, will there be another Misfits album? It's premature to declare it now. I'd love it if it was great. I'd be very disappointed if it was mediocre. And I do think there will be a Misfits tour, and I think they can't announce it until Riot Fest is over. And that mark down my words, there will be a Misfits tour. This is just me guessing. But they won't announce until after Riot Fest, and they will play Philadelphia, and I will be there.
I think that the difference between you making that economic calculation about, I think, about any other band that would be valid, but again, coming back to like the Misfits and just the rabid amount of people who are like legitimate, visible Misfits fans that don't seem to otherwise interact with like what's going on in modern day punk rock. There's tons of Misfits people, and they buy shit. Like,
so you think it would sell Beyonce numbers?
Yes, wow. I think it will sell Beyonce numbers. Please put that on my on the trades. Punk
Variety. Yeah. Adam White says new Misfits album with selling Beyonce numbers.
Adam White of the CBC Celebrated Punk News podcast has this prediction about I think they could sell stuff. Maybe it doesn't make sense to go make a full record. Maybe not an LP. Maybe do an EP something to sell. I don't know.
No, they probably need it. No, I mean, after a tour, don't you think they're going to do a live album?
Well, maybe. Actually, maybe not, because A, live albums don't make that much money. Maybe people would buy this one, but Danzig is notoriously reticent to put out live albums. He only ever put out one live album, and it was in a limited press by an obscure record company, and it's very good, but I think Danzig doesn't like putting out live material. I could be wrong.
I mean, regardless, they're going to put out some like Misfits bobbleheads and some underwear and some, you know, some Hot Topic stuff, and people buy all that stuff because they already do. My favorite part of this interview that was over at Rolling Stone, which, by the way, was with the guy's name you're looking for, is Corey Grow.
Corey Gow. Isn't it Gow? Was it Grow or Gow?
I think it's Grow. Anyways, I love this quote just because it's the most Jerry Only quote that I can imagine. When he asks him about making a new album, this is Only's quote. I'm just going to read it in its entirety because it's kind of great. He says, "I think it's got to evolve naturally. The only thing is we've tried to, sorry, the thing is we've tried to plan things and then we stand there and wait. And as it comes, we'll just do it. When we go back, I don't know about Glenn, but I canceled our touring and everything for this. So I'm just going to go home and write and lift." Like, I like the fact that he had to tell Rolling Stone, or I'm going to go lift. Like, A, we know you're going to go lift, Jerry Only. You're Jerry Only. But, like, oh, I just love that he brought that into it. Like, I'm going to go lift.
Dude, like,
I canceled the tour. I'm going to wait for Glenn to call me. I'm going to go fucking lift.
Dude, Doyle is still Doyle's like 40-something. He's still a monster, isn't he?
He keeps posting on, like, Instagram about his vegan diet and, like, how much he also lifts, too. That's probably most of what it is.
I think that, you know, we would all be, we would all be lucky to grow old and look like Doyle rather than grow old and look like Danzig. So
leave Danzig alone.
Anyways,
you better watch what you say.
He's got all those bricks in his front yard, you know? So, the Danzig Misfits reunion happened. Everyone is happy. Jerry's gonna fucking lift. So there you go. We're gonna hop to the next story here. Jeff Rosenstock, he of bomb music industry fame, of now, I don't know, solo artist and hanging out with Chris Farren fame. He has announced a new album. It is called Worry. It's coming out on October 14th via Side One Dummy. You can find the track list, cover art, and a video for the song Wave Goodnight to Me over at Punk News. This is a 17-song record that he is putting out, so it's not small. But anyways, you should go check it out. And there's a video there. I have some commentary on the video and everything else. I actually have a secret about the cover art to Worry that I will expose.
Ooh.
But before that, any thoughts since you gotta check the video out, check the song out? What do you think?
Yeah, it was fun. I don't know if I'll be doing, I tried getting into Jeff Rosenstock stuff when We Cool came out, because I bombed the music industry, didn't really do much for me. I don't know if I'll be jumping.
I thought you were like a Jeff Rosenstock maniac.
No, I really do like, not a maniac, but I do like Antarctica Vespucci.
Maybe that's it.
I think that's fun.
Like, I thought like Jeff Rosenstock was your guy.
No. I mean, it's not like I hate what he does.
Why do you hate Jeff Rosenstock so much, Ricky?
Literally said the opposite of that.
Millennials.
Yeah, exactly.
I was talking about how they hate Jeff Rosenstock and love Pokemons.
I'm going to wait on this and keep an eye on it and see what else comes out. But the video was fun. It was very lighthearted and kind of Jeff Rosenstock kind of video, I thought.
There's a perfectly executed Simpsons reference at the end of the video, which is great.
They had the same last name. It was like Jeff Schroeder, like, or something like that.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. I was a big bomb the music industry fan. And for some reason, I blank on We Cool. I just don't. I need to revisit it, but it, when it came out, was not a thing that in any way lodged itself into my consciousness the way that a lot of those last few bomb records did. But this feels good. I like this. I like the video. I like the whole vibe that he's doing right now. And I like this song. This is cool. I'm down. I'm actually pretty excited for this.
Who do you think the wine guy is supposed to be in the video? Like the guy with a turtleneck that stands in front of Rosenstock. Like, is he supposed to be like a pitchfork kind of guy? Or is he a punk guy? Like, who is he supposed to be?
Oh, I don't know if I can read that many layers into this. I think he's just the high society twit. I got to imagine.
So he doesn't represent anyone within the punk community or music community. He just
he's a real adult, and Jeff is trying to be a real adult, but he can't. I don't know.
I did like this, but honestly, I think Rosenstock's a little understated as an actor, if you will. Like,
he was good in this, yeah.
And maybe it's because like his like mouth is so big and his face is so expressive. In all his music videos, he's excellent at conveying a range of emotions. Like, I love how he's walking and he's in a great mood, and people that keep frowning on him, and like he goes from a great mood to a downcast mood, and it's a very gradual shift with each shot. I don't think I would be able to pull off that acting in my face, you know what I mean? So I think he's great with that. Adam, I agree with you, and then I kind of fell off on Weak Cool, and I would suspect, now I could be wrong, is what I loved about Bond, the music industry, was how bombastic and explosive it was, but also had like these really wacky, rapid fire, you know, berserk sections. My favorite Bond album is definitely Scrambles.
Yeah, I agree. Weak and Cool, also, yes,
sort of Weak Cool didn't really have that. It was Weak Cool's almost Bond the music industry with that aspect removed, which left me a little disappointed. I like this track. It kind of had a power pop Elvis Costello vibe to it. I see you about the cover, Adam.
So you want to know about the cover?
Yeah. Who is the guy? Who is like this guy?
I have seen some people mention who the guy is, but I don't know him personally, so I'm not gonna go there because it's not my reference to drop. But
is that some like weird or offensive thing?
No. It's just that I recognize the guy from having, I guess, friends that know who the guy is, but that's not my story to tell. What I want to point out is, if you're looking at the cover to Worry, over in the corner, There's a man facing to the right in kind of like a plaidy shirt.
Yeah, I see him
clapping. That is Best Midwestern editor Scott Heisel.
Whoa!
Oh, really?
And behind him, behind him there's a woman with her arm in the air.
Yeah.
And behind her there is like a fuzzed out head. Uh-huh. That would be Mr. Scott Weisel's special lady friend there. So, so that's Scott and his wife caught in this photograph.
Mistress?
No, I was trying to do a Big Lebowski reference, but anyways, yeah. That's Scott. That's just funny. That's Scott and his wife are in the. They just happen to be in this picture that they used. So, anyways, that was fun. But that's my story. That's what I got. Best Midwestern coming every couple weeks. On punknews.org. So yeah, there we go.
Well, listen, talk about things that were built from the ground up with some appreciation by Punk News. None other than Dog Party are opening for Green Day on Green Day's not massive tour, but rather their theater tour, which is I don't know if it's a step down for Green Day or a purposeful strike at playing smaller venues to gain some sort of street cred, if you will. Anyway, Dog Party, early on championed by Punk News.
Wait, John. We only talk about Dog Party because some stupid conspiracy about how John Gentile's an idiot. Why would Green Day take them on tour? Are you paying Green Day, John?
Yeah, I am. I call Billy Joe. I'm like, listen, Billy Joe, do you want a good review of Punk News or not? He's like, please, John, please give me a good review. Please. I said, then you better freaking take Dog Party on tour and you better feature them or else we're going to give you a 7 out of 10. He's like, no.
It's like you'll post a Dog Party video, which is a band on Asian Man. It's not like your band or something, right? It's a legitimate band on Asian Man, and everyone's always like, "Fuck you, John," and this band. But then they're on tour with Green Day, and no one's saying that.
You know why? Well, the answer is quite clear, and it's because of sexism. If I was posting a band about two beardos who sang about getting drunk, no one would say anything. But I posted about a video about two young women rather, that make awesome punkish music that is not, oh, I'm a loser and I only hate my friends, I want to drink whiskey, but rather kind of punkish lyrics. Oh, well then, you know, it's sexism, quite clearly. That's what it is.
That is an interesting hypocrisy that I didn't realize until you just said that, because there are, you know, a few bands that I'll post on there that do not like the same pop punk, but relatively similar to other guy pop punk bands, and usually they'll get at least one hater comment in that realm. So I that is an interesting point.
Well, it's because Dog Party is unique and an interesting band, and
they are.
You know, people that hang around forums, and all they do is hang around forums, is they're scared of new and interesting things, and they just want to be comforted with the same thing over and over and over. But listen, man, Dog Party's new album is real good. I've been, in fact, I think I'm the guy that did the first ever interview with Dog Party. So I'm just, and I did like the first ever review of Dog Party. I'm just saying, you know, The Garden, Dog Party, Danger Friends. Listen, people in bands, you must start giving me some payola because I'm making bands, baby. But listen,
so this tour also has a Ricky approved band on it, which we should
mention. Yeah, whoa.
Listen,
what, you don't approve?
No, Interrupters.
I literally don't care.
Ricky, you don't have the clout that I have.
What?
You don't have the clout that I have. When John says something, it becomes true.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
But let me just wrap up my Dog Party rant here. This band is cool. They're nice young ladies. I've interviewed them once, and I'm glad they're having success. And one time, me and Adam Davis of Gnarboots were hanging around outside the donut shop in San Jose, and Dog Party was playing inside with Kebby Ghoulie, and we're talking to this guy. It's like, oh, those are my daughters. So I've had a significant discussion with Dog Party. His dad, who's a nice guy too, and they have parents that support their music. So I'm glad that these young ladies are having a form of success, and they're a great band. And I might go see Green Day because it'll be interesting to see Dog Party open for Green Day. You know,
I thought the same thing too. First of all, it was really interesting that Green Day is playing these smallish theaters. I mean, the Palladium's not small by any means, but it's still not like
it ain't Green Day size.
It's not Madison Square Garden by any means, or the Staples Center at all. I probably won't go because Ticketmaster is really boning everyone on those fees. But I can endorse Dog Party here because I have seen them before. I saw them once, and although I'm not like as big a fan as John, they are definitely a very fun band to see live, regardless of if you're a diehard fan and you listen to them all the time or not. But yeah, the other band opening for Green Day for the European part of the tour are the Interrupters.
Interrupters are cool, man. Don't be hating on
I did not hate on them. You saw my review of Say It Out Loud. I thought I was very fair.
Millennials. Always fairness? Wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Always wishy-washy.
Oh, they just this. Ricky, I thought. Sorry, I didn't mean to misassociate you with the Interrupters. I thought they were a band you were a fan of.
I thought they were. Listen,
like Ricky, I thought you loved Jeff Rosenstock. Not really, Ricky. I thought you loved the Interrupters. Not really.
I always talk. Yeah.
What do you stand for?
pears, obviously.
He does love pears.
Pears, leftover crack, whatever. But. Listen,
Hall and Oates. What's your stance on Hall and Oates?
I don't think I've ever listened to Hall and Oates.
You never listened to Hall and Oates. No, millennials, I'll tell you, millennials.
No, that's a millennial thing for sure.
Hall and Oates are pretty good. I mean, their greatest hits is good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't listened to Green Day regularly in probably a decade, and I don't know if I want to pay $60 plus fees to go to this. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it'll be great exposure for a band like Dog Party or whoever else to get on here. But yeah, to pay Green Day prices to go support them. I don't know if you're really supporting them at that point. Green Day's going to sell at that show one way or the other. So yeah, I mean they're it's good for them, but I feel that like a band like Green Day, all the punk rock that they've been associated with aside, they no longer tour in the same universe as the rest of us actually purchase tickets for. I think if you're going to see them, you're competing with, you know, people everyone buying else. Tickets for, I don't know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers or whatever people actually
pay. Hey, do you guys think the two questions, do you think opening for Green Day will help out a band's career or because most people don't give a shit about opening bands, you know? Second, do you think the Green Day audience will be receptive to Dog Party? For example, like if Dog Party opened for Offspring, the audience probably would not be receptive, but would they be receptive to Dog Party or Interrupters? We know Ricky would not be receptive to interrupters, even if
I've seen. Listen, playing. I've seen the interrupters three times. I've been more than open with them, and I've reviewed them. Their live shows twice.
Then why do you hate them so much?
I don't hate them so much. I've grown to be agnostic. Why do you? What do you? What about you, John? Do you hate the interrupters? Why do you hate the interrupters?
I like the interrupters.
So okay, to get away from whatever you guys are talking about,
it's getting weird. I don't know why.
So here's what my read on it is. It's actually none of the people that are going to go to this tour are really going to care one way or another about Dog Party. At least not in a way that you'd be able to measure. I'm sure some people will enjoy them. What this does for Dog Party is it helps them book their next tour.
Yeah.
Because then they can go to whoever the booking agent is that they're working with and be like, hey, fuck you, we opened for Green Day on their last thing. And, you know,
can we play a show? Can we play a show? Well, let me see it. Fuck you, we played for Green Day.
That's exactly it. All right. So we have one more story here before our middle song.
We're having fun this week. Let's do that story next week. I don't really get serious this week. We're having fun.
Are you sure Ricky and I were going to go out back and smoke and you could just do the story?
No, I'll do that story next week, but we're having fun this week. Let's just keep it jovial.
All right. Well, John, sure. Then play us a song.
Okay.
Play a song.
Yeah, actually, I will keep it jovial. Adam White, Ricky, you're a millennial, so you won't know about this.
No, why would I?
Adam White, do you know Bananarama?
Oh, I've heard of them.
I definitely know of Bananarama name-wise, era-wise. You've probably talked about them, but I don't associate them with a band I listen to.
I haven't, and actually, I agree with you. Bananarama is one of these 80s groups that you've heard the name of, but maybe you've never actually heard. And so I do have this fascination with 80s pop groups that are actually awesome punk bands, like Bow Wow Wow, Modern English, and especially Flock of Seagulls, and especially Bow Wow Wow. And so whenever I'm at the record store, I pick up these $1 80s records. I'm like, well, maybe it's really good. And Bananarama was not really good. Bananarama was actually pretty bad, pretty real bad. But I did not know this. Bananarama actually started out as another one of Malcolm McLaren's bands, and one of their earliest recordings was a cover of the Sex Pistols' No Feelings. So Bananarama, 80s pop titans for a brief 6 months or so, recorded a version of No Feelings by the Sex Pistols. So let's just check it out of mere curiosity, shall we not?
All right, let's do it. Ah! right, we are back on the Punk News Podcast. That was Bananarama covering the Sex Pistols. We have a handful of media that came out this week that we just want to touch on because you might want to go check it out. So the first one here that we are going to talk about, the Smoking Popes have released their first new material with their original lineup since, I think, 1998. So you can find all this stuff via Asian Man. Basically, the material comes in a two-song digital single that the band is releasing. Well, I guess this has released. They released it on September 5th. So the band originally disbanded in 1998. They performed in 2005, and they featured sort of like a revolving state of drummers, including Neil from the Lawrence Arms at one point playing double duty in them. Original drummer Mike, I can never pronounce this guy's last name. Was it Falumli?
Falumli, it looks like.
Falumli. I always want to say Fumale, but that is not the way it is spelled, I'm sure, or pronounced. Mike Falumli rejoined the band in 2015, and Park reports that they have plans to release a new album at some point in the future. So you can go check out these new songs over on Punk News or over via Asian Man Records. The band is scheduled to play Riot Fest in Chicago this month. So in any case, you can definitely go and check this shit out if you are a fan of the Smoking Popes, in particular the original Smoking Popes. I am assuming that because this is a Midwest kind of emo associated band, that John, you don't really have anything to say about this.
Correct, you are correct, Mr. White.
Ricky, were you a Smoking Popes person?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of cool to see a band get back together, but they never really did much for me. But you know, good on them for doing this.
Fun fact: Morrissey's a big fan of this band. That's true.
You know what? I actually, I admit knowing absolutely nothing about the Smoking Popes, but I got the live record that they released a few years ago. For no other reason, this was the At Metro CD kind of DVD that was put out. Not for any reason other than the fact that like the record label sent it to me. And I totally love the vocalist's voice to this band. I think that like Josh, Caterer has, you know, he's got a super, super pleasant, almost croonery at times singing voice. So, I mean, I could see why Morrissey would be a fan. So yeah. Probably not the most punk rock voice in the world, but it's pleasant. I like it. So anyways, there's Smoking Pope stuff, if that was a band that you liked. Moving on from there, John, you take this.
Okay. Pansy Division. They're streaming the new album. Pansy Division is probably the first queercore band. I think they're the first queercore band, if not the first, one of the first. Certainly one of the most longest lasting and regarded. They've got a new album coming out this Friday. It's called Quite Contrary, and it's out on Alternative Tentacles. We have put out a lot of Pansy Division records. There's actually even a 7-inch record with Jello Biafra singing with Pansy Division. Fun fact, the current form of Pansy Division is also half of the current version of The Avengers. Anyways, it's a good album. It's Pansy Division doing what Pansy Division do. A lot of double entendres and a lot of single entendres, if you will. It's power pop, kind of East Bay style, and Pansy Division fans will be quite pleased with this record. Ricky, did you check this out? Are you a Pansy Division fan? Have you ever seen The Avengers, or have you seen Pansy Division?
I've not seen either live. I'll throw Pansy Division on every once in a while, but this was fun. Kind of lighthearted. I was not, you know, it's cool. Definitely. I found this completely unoffensive and fine.
So yeah, you should go check it out. It's a new Pansy Division record, and it is worth you take a look at.
Here's a question. This is really a question for an interview with them. Is Pansy Division as important as they were in the 90s? And actually, we talked about Green Day. Pansy Division quite famously opened for Green Day on the Dookie Tour and were booed almost every night and even got death threats, which does not say much for Green Day's fan base. Is Pansy Division important anymore? Are they only important as a legacy act? Or is there still work for Pansy Division to do?
That is interesting. I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that because that's, you know, I would really want someone who either kind of like identifies as queer or is closer to that scene to make that call. I mean, like on the one hand, like, good for them for doing stuff still. They have every right to continue being their band. I guess the bigger question is are they serving the same social role that they were serving back when, you know, you had a lot of less visibly, you know, queer people in punk rock. I don't know. That's an interesting thing. I can't imagine it is, you know, I can't imagine that like their work is done. It's not like,
yeah, I don't think there's no reason for them to stop. I think a good question would be like, where do you guys go from here?
I'm pretty sure, Ricky, that everything is just rosy for LGBT people now, and no one needs to do anything.
I had a similar thought. Oh, go ahead.
I just was running. I think it's not. I'm not saying there's nothing to you know speak out against. It's just like maybe is it a different, slightly different direction or not? I don't know.
John, what were you gonna?
Oh, I was gonna say, I've also been thinking about Peter Tosh a lot, because now that weed's basically legal in America, and I think Canada, is weed legal in Canada basically, Adam?
We're getting there.
Yeah. So like half of Peter Tosh's songs are about why weed should be legal. So what would he do? You know what I mean?
At some point, Peter Tosh is gonna be like, my work here is done, and just like ride away on a horse.
Ascend to Rasta heaven.
Yeah. So. Anyways, the work is not done for any of these people we've talked about. Maybe a little bit more so Peter Tosh.
Well, he's dead, so not much of a consolation. But there's still certainly work for Pansy Division to do, and Pansy Division's cool. And we will be having a very cool Pansy Division interview at Punk News very soon.
All right, Ricky, this next one seems like a you story, so I'm going to let you take it.
Yeah, so Choking Victim have announced a one-time New York City reunion show, which will feature at least Sturgeon and Alec Bailey, and probably the original members, which I guess will be up for debate, which are the original members. But they'll be playing, songs from No Gods, No Managers and from their earlier EPs. They'll be playing at the Warsaw in New York on October 30th. And tickets go on sale on Friday, the 9th of September. I almost booked a flight. I'm not kidding. I mean, is this, I wonder what the occasion was for wanting to do this. John, what do you think?
I think it'll be cool. My guess for the drummer, there have been reports that the drummer is Squirt. I don't know, but I doubt it's Squirt. My guess would be that it's going to be John Dolan on drums, the original Choking Victim drummer. This is cool. Choking Victim has reformed a bunch of times. I remember one time Adam White, do you remember Team Spider video?
Ooh, that sounds familiar. I don't think I've heard that in a long time.
Team Spider video was this whacked out video program run by like a bunch of punk squatters in New York by a team called Team Spider. And they had this old guy named Zach who was like 80 or something that would like read poetry while they played like crust punk and stuff. Well, one time Choking Victim reunited for Team Spider, probably about 2006, I think it was, maybe 2007. And they played there. And there's this famous video where someone insults Scott and he gets this look of pure hurt on his face. And you feel so sorry for him. Anyways, Choking Victim has reformed a couple of times. They even went to, I think was it Australia as quote Choking Victim, but it was really Scott and other guys. And they played Choking Victim tunes. This will be cool. I'm thinking I'm going to go up for this. And it'll be cool. They'll play the Choking Victim songs as a three-piece as opposed to being a four- or five-piece. And it'll be awesome. And, it'll just be a fun evening. What else can you say? It'll be cool. Really, no commercial value, Choking Victim, Leftover Crack, and even SFH. They're all kind of the same band in that it's the same, generally the same people, and they all, you know, and the songs swap in and out between them. Like Leftover Crack has played Choking Victim and No Commercial Value songs. Choking Victim played No Commercial Value songs. SFH played Leftover Crack tunes. So it's all kind of different iterations of the same group of people, which makes it fun and cool.
Well, and also like several of the songs on Constructs are actually originally No Commercial Value songs.
Right.
But yeah, I would, if, can we even hope for a tour?
Probably not. I mean, because The other, like, what Alec tours, or Alec tours.
Yeah.
If it's John Dolan, he actually has a job in New York, so they're probably just doing it for fun, you know.
Oh, this is gonna be, it's gonna be cool. It's gonna be really cool.
Well, hey, you should fly out, Ricky. We'll have the time, man. We'll go cruising around NYC, Brooklyn.
Oh.
Kicking it.
Yeah.
Listen to the Interrupters.
Exactly.
So, Ricky.
Hmm.
Before you go and hang out at John's creepy Interrupters party that he's going to throw you.
Ricky gets his shot. Where's the Interrupters? They'll be here eventually, Ricky. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I got a song. We premiered this a few months, a song from this EP like a few months ago, but I keep coming back to it because it's really good. It's a 7-inch by this band called Starving Wolves out of Texas. We premiered their track that also featured appropriately Leftover Crack Sturgeon and Brad Logan. But the B-side title track is actually quite good, and it's called We Are One off the We Are One 7-inch. So yeah, check them out. The band also has members from like the Crumb Bums and also Sniper 66. So check that out. Yeah, so here's We Are One by Starving Wolves.
We're back. So here's how this is going to play out. The scene is that it's New York City. Ricky gets off the plane, walks into the airport. There is a man standing there with one of those little white signs that says like Tricky Ricky, and he's wearing a hat and what is it called, a livery uniform, you know, a limo driver. So Ricky gets in the limo and the limo starts to drive away, and then it doesn't seem to be going to where the Leftover Crack show is going, but instead it goes into kind of like a seedy warehouse area, And Ricky gets out, and John's there, and John's like, "Oh, great, Ricky, Ricky, you're here. Let's go to the show."
Where is this going?
And he brings Ricky into the into the big creepy empty warehouse that's there. And John's like, "Hey, maybe you should have a drink for this show, Ricky." And he tries to make you drink this purpley liquid that's in clearly like a Coke bottle, like a plastic Coke bottle. And you're like, "I don't want to drink this, John." But John's like, "No, Ricky, drink it. It'd be good for the show, for leftover crack. Drink it, Ricky, drink it." And you can all tune in next week to find out what happens to Ricky on
where do you find the time to think
Punk
of this
News Radio podcast
voted
drama.
Number one by Canada. They love our fan fiction.
Oh. So anyways, if you want to write us an email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Thanks to Mr. Greg Simpson for putting these suckers together and for all the bands who want to be on here. Ricky.
Can I interrupt real quick? Can we ask the listeners to write in their own Punk News podcast fan fiction?
No.
Read it live on the air. PG-13, Max. Write into podcast@punknews.org, PG-13, your own Punk News podcast fan fiction, and we'll read it live on the air. We're not live, but you know what I'm saying.
Are these originals, or do they have to pick up from like, is Ricky going to drink whatever John's got in that jug?
Well, that's up to you, Adam. I will accept originals, but do you want exclusive rights to your own story, or can the listeners do their choose your own adventure with me giving Ricky the purple liquid?
Well, it's kind of like...
I agreed to nothing here so far.
I want to say, as a content creator, I feel that I'm setting the stage. I'm really, John, I'm kind of like Stan Lee in that me and Jack Kirby have gone and put together, the story of the Incredible Hulk. But really, we want to give it now to the writers of the future to tell the stories of the Hulk. So, please take and go with where you will, brave listener.
John Bill Cosby. John is Bill Cosby, thanks to Adam White. That's podcast at punknews.org. We'll take your fan fiction. PG-13.
I implied nothing.
I agreed to nothing.
All right, that's the end.